Hosted, Chicago photographer Terry Evans, and live coverage of the Democratic National Convention. And now, here's your host, a man who lost 15 pounds from sweating this weekend, Justin Coffin.
Yeah, but I made it back by going to Portillo's, so that's good. There we go. What a night here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. This is a download with us till 11 o'clock. 312-981-7200. Lots to do tonight. The Democratic National Convention, day one. Wow. What a good start to the convention where we thought at one point it would be brokered. At another point, we thought it would be unified. At this point, we're not really sure what we're getting. We'll find out tonight as Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders will take the stage in day one. That's a pretty big first day for the Democratic National Convention, and we'll see how the crowd responds to both of them. We'll have live coverage of that coming up. What we're going to do, we did this last week, we'll start with a little political coverage. We'll go into some other stuff so we can sort of cleanse the palate, if you will. And then we'll come back to our live coverage of the Democratic National Convention after probably around 8:30, something like that. Big night in Chicago tonight, the Crosstown Classic, the Cup, Cubs Sox. Where you would have hoped that they hopefully have learned from their scheduling snafu this year and they should go back to the idea of this team should play once in May, maybe June after Memorial Day weekend, and then pick back up and have another series in July, because it would be so much more exciting if this was taking place on May 28th. It would have been like, these two teams, it would have been, now it's like, they're cutting up jerseys, trading for troublemakers. There's a lot going on in Chicago baseball right now. Melky Cabrera just robbed Chris Bryant of a home run the first inning. So there you go. There's your excitement. Now forget about it. Lots to do tonight on the download, though. We're going to do Touche coming up. Chris Varonis is in for Chris Roebling. And Dave Lundy will be here, and we'll talk about what happened this weekend with hacks and the convention and everything that's happened with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We'll talk about that as well as preview what we should expect from the Democratic National Convention. Also coming up tonight, and I'm very excited about this, Studio 435 welcomes Lollapalooza performer Sir the Baptist, a hip-hop, gospel, jazz, fusion kind of performer who has just had such tremendous, tremendous 2016. Signed to Atlantic Records. He grew up right here in Bronzeville, on the south side of Chicago, son of a preacher. We'll talk with Sir the Baptist about his budding career and also about, what his dad thinks of the music. A couple of curse words in there. But it's tremendous music. And he's been performing. You may have seen him because he's performed on Windy City Live and Channel 9 and other places in the last month or so, and he's going to bring the band into WGN Studios, the Allstate Showcase Studio tonight, and we're going to get a live performance. How exciting is that? That's what I'm talking about. Also tonight, a new exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Photography at Columbia College really focuses on petcoke. If you're not familiar with petcoke, it's that strange, I guess it would be a toxic byproduct from the oil that they're producing from the sands, you know, when they do the sort of sands drilling in North Dakota and other places. Well, the byproduct becomes this real filthy kind of black, almost granular. It's almost like sand. It's like black sand. And they were mounting mountains of this stuff on the southeast side of Chicago until just recently the city of Chicago and environmental officials got them out. So this looks at Terry Evans, who's a Guggenheim fellow and a great Chicago photographer, takes some aerial shots and other unbelievable, breathtaking shots of the petcoke factories or processing plants. So you get a better idea of what that neighborhood was up against. It's startling. And it's a new exhibit that's on stay, or it's on, it's actually till October 9. So it just opened up this weekend. So we're going to have Terry and someone from the Southeast Side Task Force on as well, talk about Petco and where we're at with that story. So that's coming up as well. So big show tonight. And like I said a little bit earlier, Bernie Sanders, we'll take that live. We'll get some updates from Philly. We'll get Ro Khan on the show. Also, we will also have all sorts of people joining us, but Dave Lundy's going to join us. Tracy Seffel's going to join us. I think I'm going to Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa is going to join us. Paris Schutz from Chicago tonight. So there's a lot of people who are going to call with their eyewitness view of what happens tonight at the Democratic National Convention. Pete Zimmerman, how are you, my man?
I'm great.
You got one eye on the ball game tonight?
I'll have an eye on the ball game. One eye on the ball game. One on the DNC.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have two working. I need new glasses, but I will have my eye on both.
There you go. All right, there we go. Well, exciting about that. We should pay attention to that game. We got to have Sam on this week to talk about. This is a huge Chicago sports week. You've got the Cubs and the Sox that are starting, but it's going to be overshadowed on Wednesday when Chicago Bears camp starts in Bourbonnais. That's crazy. Yeah. To think that football is here. It's ready to go.
Can't wait.
I know, right?
Do we still get the videos of them bringing in their video games? And
Their
TVs have gotten smaller over the years, so that's always good. But
or they show up in their Hummers, and they're like, they got their bag of clothes. They're ready to go. Like it's the local news version of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
No, that's coming up. That'll be Tuesday and Wednesday when they check into camp. But Adam Hogue is going to join us on Wednesday. So lots to do.
And you predicted I said
14-2, and I'm rethinking it because the schedule's a little more difficult than I thought. So I'm not there yet, but 15-1's not out of the possibility either. What's the point? I always get mad when newspapers and media gets on their horse and they're like 7-9. Well, thanks a lot. You know what? I have to have optimism for my football team when they start, and I believe they're going to win every single game. And I want to have at least a little bit of joy during the camps and the preseason where I'm like, this is the year. Why rain on the parade? Like they already have seen. Well, they just don't have what it takes to compete. Well, okay, sorry. you know what I mean? Like, I'd like to see us at least have a little bit of optimism in this town for the Chicago Bears before we shut it all down.
I guess if you're a sports writer, you feel like you have some credibility issue. You know, you just can't pander to the home team. But I feel like when you're a person who just played for the Bears, you're a Bears person, that I think you have to pander to the home team. I remember being really upset that Gale Sayers, the Kansas Comet, he picked the Seahawks to beat the Bears in one of the playoff games. I'm like, come on, Kansas Comet.
Right.
Irritating.
That is irritating. Well, I remember, and we'll get into it, but I remember columns calling for the firing of Lovie Smith before the season even started a couple of times where it was just like, he hasn't even started the season at all. And we're already deciding that that he needs to go. Like, I just remember those. And I'm sure that'll be, you know, if John Fox has another bad year. But it's like, for me, I don't know. Like, that's part of the joy of sports. But I I don't make a living in that regard. I'm not objective in that regard. I want the Bears to win. Mm-hmm. I hope the Bears win. So, I mean, I can understand that newspaper columnists or people who cover sports for a living, they don't necessarily want, you know, they don't actually write or have to be optimistic or positive. They have to be objective. So I understand that. But at the same time, don't go the other way and be like, 3-13, that's it. They better get some draft picks for these guys. You're like, no, wait, man, give us a couple games. All right, news, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier. He's all over it. And Esmeralda Leon, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here's The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, let's get the show on the road. It's The Download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. Why don't we get to the carryout, our nightly segment where I read the news so you at home, you don't have to. All
Here's today's top stories. The Democratic National Convention's underway, and all they got to do is play lovey ball. Just three and out and let the defense win games. But nope, fumble, false start, and pick six on the first drive. The DNC email hack shows that leaders of the Democratic Party conspired to elect Hillary and keep Bernie down. In other words, no duh. This is not good, and it's led to the resignation of DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who has replaced Joe Lieberman as the most hated Democrat in the history of politics. Or wait, maybe she replaces Hillary. She got fired, but Hillary picked her up as an honorary chair for her campaign, which, of course, riled up Facebook. But honorary chair essentially means she gets to sit in the back at the pancake breakfast, if there's room. The reason she wasn't outright cast into the sea is because she would just turn around and be a pundit for Fox News and give away more Hillary secrets. Again, no duh. Dems blame the Russians for the hack, saying that they're getting involved in our politics to help Donald Trump win because Putin and Trump are buddies. The Russians. Really? Am I the only one who saw Red Dawn, both the classic and the remake? I mean, the Russians are coming. They're really coming. Get some weapons. Get some food. We got to go to the hills. To the hills. No? It's not that kind of Russia. But this is the new normal. There can't be a boring, typical political convention these days. There's always strife. Last week, 4 years ago, 4 years before that. It's not surprising that this is becoming Stumblegate. But we'll see what the story is after Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders speak later tonight. Ooh, live politics and live mics. Can't wait. Bernie called for no booing or violence on the floor in Philadelphia. He did so by sending a mass text to his supporters in various delegations. It said, no violence, please. Also, how do I work this remote on this TV? Call your mother. She wants to talk. There's a bunch of emojis and an eggplant, which I thought was weird. It's been a long time since there was violence at a convention. Goes back to 1996 when Channel 5's Dick Kay pushed me and said, get out of my shot. That's a true story. I couldn't get out of bed for like 6 months. My hero. Donald Trump got the convention bounce, and he currently looks to be ahead 5 or 6 points. Upon hearing that news, Trump fired his entire campaign staff for not being up more. We're winners. Winners don't win. We dominate. Then he said, on to Poland. Also, where's Rahm? The mayor of Chicago has zero role in the DNC this week, even though other Democratic mayors are speaking. Gosh, have you seen the speakers at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday? He couldn't beat out Eva Longoria? I mean, Demi Lovato is speaking tonight. Demi Lovato from, like, Disney. She has more clout than Rahm Emanuel does in the Democratic Party. C'est la vie. Michael Jordan is giving $1 million to a community policing group and to the NAACP after writing that he couldn't sit by and watch what's happening in this country. Then he said, $1 million more to whoever wins. Take the over-under. The Olympics are right around the corner, and things in Rio are not going smoothly. Some of the athletes from countries like Australia, New Zealand, and Great Britain have already deemed the Olympic Village uninhabitable. The mayor of Rio shot back, saying maybe they'd be more comfortable with a kangaroo in their room. It's funny. If there weren't exposed wires and standing water. I mean, you get money from the Olympics to put these villages together, right? Less bits. Fix the plumbing. Yikes on traffic and fires in the last 24 hours. Huge fiery crash blocked the Stevenson today, and yesterday, lightning destroyed a Blue Line stop. It's official. Mother Nature wants us to use our vacation days. In weather, oh, God. This weekend was the worst. So hot, so muggy, so rainy, so thundery. I made it through the weekend by remembering January. Oh, January, so refreshingly chilly. Seriously, it was so hot that my knuckles sweat. And then the floods! I didn't even mention the floods! There's flooding! In sports, it's official. Super closer Aroldis Chapman comes over from the Yankees to close for the Cubs. The Northsiders gave up 4 players for Chapman, but you know what? He's worth it. At least on the field. Off the field? Shooting guns, alleged domestic violence, weird lawsuits from agents saying they were in prison because he told Cuban officials they helped him defect. It's real. So the Cubs go from Cubs to Dallas Cowboys in a minute. And the Cubs still hate Sammy Sosa, right? Yeah? Okay. I love Chapman. He's awesome to watch. But it's also fun to root for a team that almost has zero baggage. And I get it. It's hard in professional sports to have a team with zero baggage. And this is a Cubs team that gave a ton of money to Milton Bradley, so... Let's just see what happens. On the south side, nothing to see here. Move along. Socks are boring. Hey, what are those scissors doing out on the table? Chris Sale, what are you doing? Don't cut those jerseys! What the heck happened with Chris Sale? This dude may be a great pitcher, but this is the third or fourth strange lash out in the Sox clubhouse in the past couple years. All right, you know what? Let's see what's out there. I just feel like he's been lights out, but then again, the Sox have been shut out of the playoffs. It might be that he's just not a winner. Great pitcher, but more Jake Peavy rather than Pedro Martinez. Right? Anyone? Oh, yeah, and the Cubs and Sox, they play each other starting tonight. Arrieta goes because, you know, it was just too much for both teams to get Arrieta and Sale on the same schedule. I mean, the math, tells you what they think of the fans. All we asked for was one thing, Arrieta Sale, one game. They couldn't do it for us. Thanks, Chicago. This week is Bears camp. Woohoo! So many questions. Will Jay Cutler keep playing well? Will Jeremy Langford fill Matt Forte's shoes? Will another free agent offensive lineman retire? Oh, we already answered that one. Well, that's today. Nate Chandler signed in June, retired. That's now two offensive linemen who have retired before camp. I wouldn't worry about it, though. The Bears have historically had zero problems with their offensive line. Right? Right. And finally, a new report says that for the first time ever, mobile devices have surpassed computers when it comes to e-commerce. That means more and more people are buying their useless products by using their phone. This marks the death of the desktop, which is a bummer, because I really thought they were doing some great things with screensavers. Really advanced. Well, that's the carryout for July 25th, 2016. Now that the heat has subsided a bit, we're bringing back the Hardy Beef Stew. Never too early for some stew. True story, I did get shoved by Dick Kay once. Not everyone can say that. Coming up, Touche here. It's going to be a night in which our panelists argue about politics. Perfect. Perfect summer night. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what you said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. You go right,
you go right. All right, it's time for Touche. This is the one we've kind of been waiting for the last couple months. The Touche, which we argue about politics every Monday night here in the download. This one, a big one between the two conventions. Dave Lundy is here. Chris Roebling is out. He's on vacation. In for him, Chris Varonis. He's with he's principal with Aesop Communications. Chris, thanks for coming in. Thanks for being a part of Touche. Where do we start?
Oh, my God, Justin.
I say we start with the hack. What happened here? So the DNC gets hacked. They blame it on the Russians, as a good American tradition.
Well, just for the record, when this hack was announced in the middle of June, their security consultant blamed it on the Russians. And since then, various government officials have all said, yeah, nobody has questioned whether it was the Russians. So when yesterday Robbie Moak, the campaign manager, went on TV and said, well, you know, the Russians did this and they sent it to WikiLeaks, that was not exactly a stretch, but a lot of people were like, oh, he's blaming it on the Russians. And Donald Trump made a big deal in his tweet. Like, oh, what a joke. They're blaming it on the Russians. Like, dude, it was the Russians.
I heard a ton of people say, though, on social media yesterday, regardless of the hack, regardless of where it came from or who leaked it, somebody wrote these emails, and it's in bad form, that what we all thought to be true, the DNC sort of aligning against Bernie Sanders, was accurate.
It was, but here's the thing. Everybody knew that because of the debate schedule. When they schedule debates like at 3 a.m. And, you know, in the middle of the Super Bowl, you kind of knew they were trying to put the thumb on the scale for Hillary. So that's not news. That said, the stupidity of putting some of this stuff into email absolutely boggles the mind. And I could not be happier that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is out.
Yeah. If you want to throw darts at the Republican National Convention, and I'd be one of those guys in terms of how it was organized, this is the worst thing that could happen to Democrats right now. The sitting chairman resigns the day before in shame. But never mind that she took a co-chairmanship with the Hillary for President
honorary
campaign.
which is kind of absurd in and of itself. I mean, honorary. She gets kicked up to the campaign. So, again, the worst thing that could happen to the Democrats right now is to assuage the Bernie-acts, mm-hmm. Bernie, to reduce the superdelegate count from, I think it was like 750 to 250. Huge. They changed the platform. And now to tear off the scab. Tear it off remind all the Bernie supporters why they are so furious with the rigged system.
But here's the thing, the rigged system. Here's the thing.
Well, you've got it with the superdelegates.
Well, the DNC is feckless when it comes to this stuff. I mean, frankly, it shows a lack of faith in their candidate that they didn't think Hillary could handle Bernie. And they schedule these things. I personally, I actually think, and you're going to laugh, and you're going to mock me, and I'm ready for it.
I can't wait.
But I actually think that the Russians actually did us a favor because Debbie Wasserman Schultz had to go. And she wasn't going to go because Obama didn't feel like dealing with it, and Hillary wasn't going to deal with it in the middle of it. Now, would I have preferred it happen like 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Absolutely. Am I glad she's gone?
Someone needs to get Harry S. Truman's plaque, the buck stops here, out, dust it off, put it on Obama's desk. I put it on Obama.
Oh, it is
on
Obama.
They knew she was a liability for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
No one wanted to push her out. Obama didn't want to deal with it. So, the chickens have come home to roost.
We're in agreement.
Why though? Why wouldn't Obama want to deal with something like that?
Because he didn't care.
He carries out.
He just didn't care. Well, no, I mean, going back the 4 years, he just, look, everybody who knows Barack Obama knows he actually really doesn't care about the politics that much. The Clintons dig the politics. Barack never really liked the politics. They were a means to an end. So I don't think he cared who was in charge of the DNC.
Yeah.
And so everybody was complaining. He's like, ugh, it's not worth my time to deal with it. Now, is that okay? No, because a lot of people do care, and it has impact, particularly down ballot, where the DNC can make a real significant impact, as Howard Dean showed in the 50-state strategy leading up to 2006.
All right, so let's talk about what happened. Today, the new chair gets up there to start the convention. There's boos. The media has really pulled that out. I've heard that clip 35 times in the last hour and a half. But I mean, is there a lot of discord? I mean, as you mentioned, Chris, I mean, the idea of ripping the scab off right before it starts, there's a lot of energy, tense energy on the floor of the DNC right now.
People talk about how dark and divisive the Republican convention is, and we haven't even started with the Democratic National Convention. So, we were talking, off air that on a hot mic, Jane Sanders, Bernie's wife, came up to him and said, they don't know that your name's going to be put in for nomination. So we don't know what's going to happen.
There's going to be some goofy thing tomorrow.
There could be goofy things. It could be symbolic. It could be real. You could have more boos at the Democratic convention than you had at the Republican convention.
I promise you. Hillary Clinton is getting nominated.
But what's it say though if she gets up on stage and
winning
and
ugly?
Yeah, like
she
I
will
mean,
not be. Look, if there are boos, they're going to be at like four dead enders who won't let it go. But tonight is all about making the Bernie folks happy. You know, you got Bernie, you got Elizabeth Warren.
You got Sarah Silverman's on the ticket tonight.
Is she?
Yeah.
Michelle, see, that's an upgrade over Scott Baio.
You're right. There is something about the idea that tonight is almost progressive night when it comes to the Democratic National Convention. Kind of goofy that they did on the first night?
No, kind of right that you did on the first night. Do it, salve the wounds. Make everybody feel a little better. You know, Bernie sent a special email to his supporters today.
It was a text
basically, please don't boo. It's going to make us look really bad. And he's been, honestly, I didn't know what he was going to say on the Sunday show. So I was watching going like, okay.
He did a pretty
good
job.
And he was great. Yeah. Yeah. He said, look, there's nothing more important than defeating, the proto-fascist Donald Trump.
This is the most lukewarm, pathetic, milquetoast endorsement that you've seen like in the last 25 years. And, this could be another Ted Kennedy moment.
No.
At the 1980 convention, Ted Kennedy refused to raise arms up with Jimmy Carter, and some people say that was the beginning of the end right there in the 1980 campaign. So we'll see.
But Ted Kennedy hadn't already endorsed Jimmy Carter.
Well, I've been hearing that kind of been pulled back a little bit. I've heard today the saying that the Bernie Sanders press conference and all the sort of quote-unquote endorsement wasn't really an endorsement. It was just a rally to say that she's going to win, so let's get behind her.
The endorsement press conference, it was something along the lines of, well, certainly Hillary Clinton has gotten the delegates.
And yeah, no,
that was the endorsement.
That was the endorsement.
I will grant you that.
Bernie as a candidate is kind of like the Gila monster. When he bites down, he won't let go unless you saw off his head.
Oh, this is going to be good. Chris Varonis and Dave Lundy in studio. It's Touche. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the convention bounce. Polls came out today. Nate Silver saying that Donald Trump up 10 points.
Boing!
So we'll talk about what that means for what we're going to see at the Democratic Convention, but also what's going to happen after. It's Touche. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right.
It's Touche. Dave Lundy, Chris Varonis, and for Chris Roebling tonight. Chris Varonis is a principal at Aesop Communications. All right, so let's get to the polling numbers today came out, and there was indeed a convention bounce. The numbers went up for Donald Trump in conventional polls. You're talking 5 or 6 points. And Nate Silver, which is much more analytical and, you know, percentages, looking at 10, almost 10 points. Surprising, because we were talking last week about maybe there wouldn't be bumps for either candidate based on the conventions.
Most candidates get a modest to major bump. I think the biggest might have been with Obama, which was plus 14 in 08. So this is not unexpected. I think just because the Democratic convention is right on top of the Republicans, that Hillary will eat into Trump's bump. But really, I personally just think these bumps, national polling is all meaningless. Really, what matters is these 8 or 9 states, and those polls matter the most.
And what are we seeing out of those 8 or 9? It's too early to tell. I mean, does it seem like they're going to definitely be in play all the way up to November?
Well, I've told all my friends going back 2 weeks, I said, guys, ignore all polling from 3 days before the convention to 3 days after both conventions. Let's see where we are at the end of both conventions to see what the actual bump was. The fact that Donald Trump got a bump, I'm not surprised he got a bump. The night of the convention, I was a little surprised at the Instapoll results, but once you saw that, you knew the bump was coming. It was interesting to see where it came, though. So in college-educated whites, there was zero bump. In fact, he lost 2 points. But among non-college-educated whites, he got like a 10-point bump. And at least I think that was in the CNN poll. And that's really Hillary's challenge. She's now getting 23% of non-college-educated whites. That's not going to hold past this week. My guess, and I think I predicted this on the show last week, is that when you get through both weeks, Hillary will have a net plus of 2 or 3. That could be wrong.
You guys are both communications guys. Chris, tell me, I mean, in this case, what do you tell both candidates? I mean, obviously, let's start with the Democrat side. I mean, it starts in a bumpy way for the DNC and everything that happened over the weekend, and even today with the boos. You know, what do? They stay with their plan and just try to ride it out till Hillary speaks on Thursday, or did they try to make some change?
If you're the Trump campaign.
If you're the Clinton campaign. Do you just straight ahead? We'll start with the Clinton.
If you're the Clinton campaign, I think you want to put the focus all on your speakers, and they do have, relative to the Trump lineup, they do have an impressive list. They happen to be the incumbent party, too. So that certainly helps. So there's going to be a lot of day two coverage on these speeches. You've got Michelle, you've got Bernie tonight. So there's going to be a lot of goodwill, a lot of positive sugar and honey coming out of it. I think you bury the Debbie Wasserman Schultz thing. I think she announced today she wasn't going to gavel open. There's still a question about if she's going to gavel close the convention.
No, I think she's gone into protective custody.
Well, you hope she's gone to protective custody.
Darn right,
I do. Witness relocation.
Yeah. Right.
All right, so let me ask you the same question, Dave, for the other side, for the Trump campaign. With the stumbles that are happening for the Democrats, do you tell your campaign, do you tell your candidate, keep it tight, keep quiet. What do you tell Donald Trump while this is going on the other side of the aisle?
Well, of course, good luck with that. But I think that the lesson here is what the Democrats did when the Melania plagiarism scandal was exploding. They shut up. Hillary Clinton's campaign, I don't think they said anything for 2 days about the Melania speech. And I'm looking forward, by the way, to hear Michelle Obama's speech in its original form, unfiltered by Melania. I think that if the Trump people were smart, they would just let this thing implode. But it's Donald Trump, and he has no self-control, and so he's been tweeting all day over and over and over again. And it appears he's going to be live tweeting each of these speeches.
Oh, man. So, Chris, what do you say to that? What do you say to Donald Trump in that case?
I think if you're Trump, you make a full-court press to these upset Bernie supporters, these trade deals. They're similar candidates in a lot of ways. They're speaking to real economic dislocation. That's something hardcore Bernie voters have an ear for that others don't. So I think you make it all about trade deals. I think you play up the divisiveness of the Democratic convention. And at the end of the day, you reinforce, I'm the only way forward.
Well, that's what Donald Trump said. I am the light and I'm the, well, whatever he said. It was just a wee bit messianic. The world is going to die unless you let me save you.
Are we going to hear a different tone from the Democrats? I mean, when you think about, are they going to go softer because Trump went hard?
The Republican, you know, yes, Trump got a bump, but I'm sorry, that was the darkest convention speech I've ever heard in my life from a major party contender. Went back and listened to Nixon 68, and Nixon sounded like Pollyanna. So I think you're going to hear a recognition that we have problems, but the focus is going to be on solutions. And the focus is going to be on, look, we have an optimistic future, and we have ways of making that future happen, and here we are. And by the way, I think that Wednesday night when Tim Kaine gets up there and gives his speech, if he does anywhere near as well as he did on Saturday, he's going to blow people away.
Two things.
I agree that Trump has elevated and resurrected the personality cult in a way that Russia and China could never do. But if it was so dark and divisive, Hillary should be running away with this, and yet she's not. And that's probably... that's probably the very sad, leaky boat that you're in right now, that you have to deal with a Democratic National Committee chair that resigns the day before, and this email snow overhang that just won't go away.
It's like there's leaks and there's leaks.
There's old leaky canoe that you turn over like, I think it still works. Let's put it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the DNC.
It's a little cracked, but I think this boat will take us to the promised land.
You sure hope so.
Dave Lundy and Chris Varonis. Chris, thanks for sitting in tonight. Yeah, we appreciate it. We'll be back with Touche. Dave, we'll hear you tonight in response to Bernie Sanders' speech. And throughout the week, you're going to Philadelphia.
I am.
So we'll check in with you from the convention. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. All right, so we'll shift gears, get away from a little political talk. We're going to talk about Petcoke and photography coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour. And then at 8:30 after the news, hip-hop gospel jazz performer Sir the Baptist, before he hits Lollapalooza, he hits Studio 435. Woo! Excited, man. It's going to be a great live performance. Bob's here early setting up. This is going to be fun. We'll do that. And then coming up after 9 o'clock, we will start our convention coverage up again. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Sir the Baptist in studio, performing live at Studio 435. Excited to have such a talent, Atlantic Records. Playing Lollapalooza this weekend. How great is that? Before you get to Lollapalooza, you listen to 720 WGN. You don't even need to go. He's only going to play a couple songs. But I'm excited to have him here. I'm a big fan of his music and a kid from Chicago. We'll talk about his upbringing and just about where he's at with his music now. So that's coming up. And then, of course, after that, we will shift to coverage of the Democrat National Convention. Bernie Sanders speaks tonight, so that will be coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So we'll talk with people in Rokan and others who are in Philadelphia and also some pundits here. A new exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Photography uses work from 8 artists to showcase the impact that Petcoke and Dirty Energy has had on the southeast side of Chicago. Pet coke is a highly toxic byproduct from extracting oil from tar sands. It's huge, huge mountains of this stuff was on the southeast side. It was housed there until recently when the city and environmental leaders stood up to move it out of that community. But some of the effects still linger. But the art on display until October 9th, and what's amazing about the photos, the photography specifically, is that it gives you a better understanding of not only what the piles of pet coke look like, but its impact on the neighborhood and the houses that border the old processing plants. I mean, some of the photography I never understood, and I've covered this story and I know the story so well, how close that plant was to houses, to neighborhoods, to a community. It really is an impactful look on dirty energy in this country. For me, it's amazing to see because I've only known the story, like I said, from a distance. But to be able to see this up close and personal, even from the aerial photography, it's breathtaking. One of the artists involved in the exhibit, Chicago photographer and Guggenheim fellow Terry Evans. Also joining me tonight, Brian Williams. He's the board president of the Southeast Environmental Task Force, both in studio. Thanks for being here, Terry, Brian.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's talk about this. Terry, how'd you get involved in this? Because, I mean, it takes – obviously, I had saw your byline in a Chicago Magazine piece from a while back. Mm. But how did you get involved, and what did you know about pet coke when you got involved?
I didn't know anything about it. And some people from NRDC, the Natural Resource Defense Council, introduced me to the issue because – my work is about land and people and how and the effects of land use on people and vice versa. And I really wanted to be exploring an issue that was about local people being affected by corporate-owned destructive industrial polluting work. And so and the community resisting it. One slight correction I wanted to make on your introduction is that you said the KCBX used to operate there. In fact, they're still in business.
They're still in business, right?
Yeah, they're still right. In business, and we don't really know what that will mean. There have been trains lined up with pet coke in them for some time now, and we've been told that they will still be using that site as a direct.
Well, let me ask Brian, you know, being on the southeast side of Chicago, I mean, the mountains, you know, that were in sort of the news for so long, those are gone. But what is happening on the southeast side?
Well, so now we're looking at the next steps. The mountainous piles of pet coke are no longer there. The community finally worked and pressed the city to push an ordinance that required that all of the pet coke be removed from those sites. But we still have the environmental impacts associated with it, the impacts to the soil and groundwater, and also the impacts to the Cowsag River. So we do have those issues remaining, the staining, the particulate matter, and things of that nature. So now we're working with the city to, with the community to try and determine the next steps, what the community would like to see there.
Is it harder? I mean, when you're talking about environmental impact of something that there was a movement to remove, meaning the pet coke was removed and there's still something behind the wall. We don't know what's happening, as you mentioned, Terry. But is it harder to get that sort of mass I don't want to say uprising, but that sort of movement from a community to make something happen when they can't see it anymore?
True. Yeah. Yes, it is. And quite frankly, there was some difficulty in getting people involved when you could see it. You know, see, people saw it as job opportunities, and some people were just apathetic. But now that the piles are gone, there is some apathy towards trying to see what the next potential steps are. But really, it's just educating people and trying to make them aware of what the impacts associated with that presence of that material was and is, but then also trying to educate people of what the opportunities with it being gone, what we can do with that area now.
Terry, and also, one of the problems is that we haven't been able to get the Department of Public Health to respond. So we don't really have any measure of the long-term effects of people for 8 years breathing.
And that was a big part of that story, was that the wind would pick up in those. I mean, it's such granular material that it would just blow and hit the sides of houses. And there was, you know, and kids were breathing it in. It was just not the right place for that kind of processing plant. When you went down there, Terry, and you started your work, were you surprised at how close the community was to this facility?
Oh, I was shocked. It's just right across the street. Mm-hmm. But the sort of the odd maybe misconception, it's not as if the streets were covered with black dust. It's this, it's much more, it was much more insidious. It's this kind of greasy dust that mm-hmm. you almost don't see until you wipe your hand along the car fender and it comes out all black and greasy and it's hard to get off your hand. Right, Brian?
Right. But you also, I mean, even with that, but you definitely saw it in your air filters when you would change the filters in your furnace or in your vehicles, things of that nature. You really saw the impacts. We were changing our air filters and our heaters and our cars much more regularly than required. And you could really see the nasty, dirty, caked on, built up black
is
dust.
Is part of the problem, you know, in, I mean, obviously it'll be known. I think it's one of the more historical moments for this country where a community stood up and said, this has to remove. And you got the attention of the city of Chicago. That rarely happens. For the southeast side of Chicago to be in this position where there's always been in your history environmental concerns, whether it be the steel plants or whether it be the pet coke or whatever.
The Calumet region is the birthplace of environmental justice, going all the way back to Hazel Johnson organizing in Algale Gardens with President Obama when he was just a community organizer and working to get the environmental justice bill signed by President Clinton a little over 20 years ago. So we have had a long history of environmental contamination and a long history of environmental battles in that area. But on the flip side, there's hope. We also have a rich history of open space and biodiversity, and we, along with that history of U.S. steel, we also have steel manufacturing mm-hmm. and dirty polluting industry. We're working with the community to try and develop what we call the Green Economic Industrial Corridor, building on that history of manufacturing in that area and trying to go towards green manufacturing. Instead of making steel, we want to make solar turbines. We want to make wind turbines and solar
repurposing
panels,
what
that
area has always been, but giving it a little bit more, I guess, just a better environmental.
Exactly right. A more environmentally sustainable facelift.
Bryant Williams is the board president of the Southeast Environmental Task Force. Also in studio with me, Guggenheim fellow and Chicago photographer Terry Evans. They're both part of the Museum of Contemporary Photography's exhibit, Petco, Tracing Dirty Energy, which is on display until October 9th. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN Chicago, a new exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Photography is on display until October 9th. It is called Petcoke Tracing Dirty Energy, and it is the work of 8 different artists who really explore the impact that Petcoke and dirty energy has had on the southeast side of Chicago. In studio with me, one of those artists, Chicago photographer and Guggenheim fellow Terry Evans, also joining me tonight, Bryant Williams. He's the board president of the Southeast Environmental Task Force. All right, so let's talk about, you know, back to the art. You know, how much access did you get? I mean, obviously you were able to go aerial, which is really amazing. It's breathtaking stuff. But was it really just kind of working around the corporation and the walls of that corporation to understand how Petcoke was affecting the community?
It was working around the edges, and it was from the aerial perspective that I was able to actually show what was going on. And then it was coming down from that aerial perspective to actually photograph and interview the activists whose band Petcoke Group I had joined. And so it was through those portraits and interviews that I felt like my part of the story was made whole, you know, from this aerial perspective down to specific individuals and their stories. And the Museum of Contemporary Photography did a great thing in hosting this show, because they didn't just host the show, which would have been a great thing in itself, but they actually joined in solidarity with the band Petcoke Group. And they said, we are against Petcoke and dirty energy. This is no small thing for a museum to do. And the other artists in the show are each so diverse and interesting. We have Brian Holmes, who made this wall-sized, it's on the wall in the museum as a large graphic of the Southeast of the whole Calumet region. But then there is an interactive, there's a large monitor there, and you can play on it and discover all the connections of global energy from the Calumet region to fracking in North Dakota to lines of global oil and all kinds of things in between. He's just one artist. You know, there's seven others.
Well, it's. I mean, Brian, let me bring you back in here. The Calumet region, it's just been one environmental fight after another. I mean, that's what we talked. You mentioned that even before the break. So the idea that there's a history of environmental justice movement. Historically, has come out of that area.
Very true. I mean, like I mentioned, we can go all the way back to when I was in high school with, you know, Hazel Johnson and the toxic donut that she referred to, the presence of. I think there's between 75 to 85 landfills or hazardous waste generators, generating sites in the 10th Ward alone. In the 7 years that I've been involved with the Environmental Task Force, you know, we've been planning to move away from, I shouldn't say move away from, but really focus on more environmental education mm-hmm. and open space stewardship. But we've not had the opportunity because it's been one battle after another.
We obviously a lot of focus and rightfully so, but a lot of focus on Petcoke. It's amazing that the city of Chicago and the mayor and everybody involved stood up. That's not usually the case with politics involved.
Very true.
But especially when you're talking about big corporations like that were involved with who were actually housing the Petcoke. But for you, I mean, it is fight after fight after fight because the southeast side has been a place for industry, and it's not just Petcoke.
Exactly right. I mean, I can go back to about 3 years ago, we had a massive campaign against a coal gasification plant that was planned to be constructed directly across the street from Washington High School to a gun range that was planned to be placed in Hegwisch Marsh, I'm trying to decide which one to choose from. The Paxton landfills, the incinerator.
Were you familiar, I mean, you're obviously familiar with the Petcoke issue, but were you familiar with all the environmental challenges that the Calumet region, the southeast side, had to deal with? And what I guess is interesting from an arts standpoint is that juxtaposition between industry and community. And it just seems like that's been something that there has been some conflict over the idea that is it an industrial corridor or is it a neighborhood?
Well, one of the really interesting things that's happening now as this whole issue evolves is what Bryant mentioned a few minutes ago about the idea of developing a green economic industrial corridor and having the community itself determine what that would look like, what kind of values, what kind of requirements would business have to commit to come in and to come in and set up an industry or any kind of mm-hmm. business along the Calumet. And so it's this kind of transformative vision coming from the community that inspires me.
Let me ask you just about the idea of being an artist and the difference between being an advocate. You mentioned that you joined the band Petcoke group. Is there a difference between sort of, like, I always think of artists almost in a way kind of being like journalists in the way that they are objective and they approach their sources? For you, do you feel the same way about the way that you produce your photography and your art?
I'm not objective. I'm a fully, wholly committed activist. And there's no longer any line for me between being an artist and an activist. I used to want to raise questions. Well, you could look at it this way, you could look at it that way, but we can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't have time. We have to take care of this earth, and we have to take care of our communities, and we have to recognize the relationships and the relatedness of all of us. I don't tell both sides of the story anymore.
Right. Brian, let me ask you, I mean, for the artists that are involved in this exhibit, mm-hmm. For you at the Southeast Ed Task Force, I mean, do you guys, do you recognize Are you, you know, with the exhibit? I mean, do you go, okay, this is great for us. This is almost like PR for us.
But
do you feel like as Terry was just talking about the advocacy? Do you guys do the neighbors, do the people there feel that?
I think so. I mean, Terry and I we met through this campaign, and I think we've developed a bit of a friendship. And you know, I think I see him more as a partner as well in this. And as we advocate against Pet Coke, but you know, I think And I think the Environmental Task Force, we see this as a great opportunity. We're telling our story and trying to draw people to the area to see what we're dealing with. But Terry is kind of, and the other artists that she's involved with, is taking photos of the pictures that we're trying to paint with our words, mm-hmm. and showing it to other people, you know, taking it out to the masses. And, you know, I think there's been a long history of artists serving as advocates. You know, I grew up in the late 80s and early 90s, and I think of Public Enemy. You know, they were the original raptivists. I mean, they had, you know, they were rappers, but they were advocates at the same time. You could say the same thing about Tupac and many other artists, going all the way back to the Beatles with John Lennon. It could be argued that he was an activist as well.
Well, I mean, if you can't make it out to the Museum of Contemporary Photography, which is at Columbia, they can check out your website, because your website has a lot of great stuff. What's the website?
Oh, it's TerryEvansPhotography.com, but they have to come to the
exhibit. No, come
exhibit.
To the exhibit. I'm just saying, if you want to see it, that's just sort of like a teaser to coming to the exhibit.
Sure.
But it's really, it's breathtaking, and it really is startling to see those images, because you see something that you don't realize is just a couple miles away,
mm-hmm.
and how close some of the industrial and environmental impact is, not just on the southeast side, but on the region as a whole. In studio with me tonight, Terry Evans. She's a Guggenheim Fellow and a Chicago photographer. Bryant Williams is the board president for the Southeast Environmental Task Force. The Museum of Contemporary Photography's exhibit, Pet Coke, Tracing Dirty Energy, is on display until October 9th. Thanks both for coming in tonight. Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thanks for having us.
Here's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Like I said, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to catch up with the Democratic National Convention. Live coverage will bring in the speech of Bernie Sanders as he takes the stage. Possibly as well, we will bring you... I'd like to hear from Elizabeth Warren, but I think she's going to hit stage a lot sooner than that. Mm. Michelle Obama is tonight. Cory Booker's on stage right now. I mean, there's some real big name speakers coming through and are on stage right now at the Democratic National Convention. But we will bring you Bernie Sanders' speech coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, in the single off the new album, Preacher's Kid, hip-hop artist Sir the Baptist says, "You're going to have to forgive me. I'm going to raise hell until I reach heaven's door." No need for forgiveness, because Chicago-born Sir the Baptist doesn't need permission. His music speaks for itself, and he's making the music industry turn their head. He's been performing alongside artists like Chance the Rapper and Travis Scott. He signed with Atlantic Records, and this week, the son of a Southside preacher takes his unique blend of gospel and hip-hop to the stage at Lollapalooza. He and his band, Church People, are in studio with me tonight for a Studio 435 live performance. Before we get to that performance, they're going to be setting up here. It's my pleasure to welcome Sir the Baptist to the WGN studios. Sir, good to see you.
Good to see you, man. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of your music. I think that it's about time we get that record, which is coming up here. So you'll hear some people around, like, you know, setting up musicians or setting up instruments, things like that. So pay no attention. We'll do that after the 9 o'clock hour. But why don't we start? I mean, I says son of a Chicago preacher. So talk about your upbringing. I mean, you actually spent your life in the church.
Yeah. I was born in Bronzeville, and right there at Mercy Hospital, which is the gateway to jazz heaven. Bronzeville having Louis Armstrong, Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald performed in Bronzeville, and a lot more. Muddy Waters, Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
So born right there at Bronzeville, and my dad being a preacher, it sort of taught me how to apply community with music and in a big way. So yeah, that's where I'm from, Bronzeville.
Well, let's start. I mean, why don't we go right there? I mean, for you, how much was music a part of your life growing up?
It's a lot, you know, because your dad's the pastor, so he's always asking, hey, you know, who's going to sing this Sunday or whatever. And who would have ever thought that those things, or singing in a choir or singing for Easter or anything like that, would lead me to add music behind my message even more. So growing up, music is always around you. The best musicians come from the church. Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, or anybody, you know, they sort of get their thing from the church.
When you were a kid and your dad said, hey, we want you to be in the choir, or you're going to be around, was that something that was an honor, or were you like any kid who's just like, oh, man?
it's fun until you miss playing time for rehearsal, right? So you get a chance to sing next to your brothers, your big brothers and sisters, and I had 22 of those, so I was really excited. But once I got a little older, I was just like, yo, this is taking up all my fun time, and I have to go to choir rehearsal. But, I mean, it contributed to, you know, patience and discipline. So,
well, talk about the music. I mean, there's something special in the music you were doing in the church. I mean, to talk about gospel and being in a Southside Chicago church, what did you learn about music being in the choir?
You learn a lot. You learn musicianship from a level that, you know, only the greats got. Like, for example, James Brown got his style from a preacher. Actually, hip hop came from preaching because it's sort of the way preachers preach. It's called hooping.
Right.
But it has this piece of it where it's musical, but it's also message. So, you know, all of these things, once I got into the industry, realized that my childhood had prepped me to do this in the right way.
And you've said you've been on record kind of talking about the idea of hooping and how you use it, because, you know, that's, I mean, you are a rapper and you talk, but your style is a little bit, it's really unique. I mean, you're talking about you'll rap, but you're also almost like a hype man in your own regard. And that's that preacher part. That's that hooping
part. Because, you know, and I've said this for almost, you know, 3 years now, but I look at rappers and I go, wow, they're really good rappers. I look at singers and go, wow, you're a really good singer. But I think I'm stuck right in the middle, and I think it's really preaching, you know, and I take this so serious to the point to where I got my ordained license to be a minister.
Really?
Yeah. So I want to be the first hip hop chaplain of a sports team, of a college, and then the first hip hop bishop of the White House, man. So this is something I take, you know, take to heart, and I think it's a lifelong journey instead of just a fad for now.
Well, I mean, we were talking about your life in the church and growing up in your dad's church. You know, a lot of musicians would push back to that, or almost find their music or their voice in rebellion.
Right.
What keeps you as making, you know, the sound, the gospel, the music that you were just talking about? How do you keep that honest, and how did you keep that with you as an artist?
Well, you know, most of the time they leave the church to embrace their cool. I was able to embrace my cool, but still embrace my spirituality in a way that Tupac would have wanted to do. But between propaganda and rapaganda, he sort of got pushed into sort of this thug mentality. This is a guy that was doing ballet. And now he ends up, you know, in this sort of predicament. I think when you run away from spirituality, trying to be cool is where you really entrap yourself to fall.
So you think that it's not only just about being cool, but the forces of the music industry and other places, they don't necessarily see dollar signs in the pews, if you will, right? They're looking. I mean, Kanye West famously talked about that almost in Jesus Walks. That's, you know, if I talk about Jesus, my record's not going to get played. But the idea being that that's not something that's usually manufactured by the music industry.
But you have to also look at it like that's probably the biggest Kanye record ever, you know? And the reason why is because spirituality is what leads us. But if we say it in the right message, in the right way, then it's not about sounding gospel, but it's about just telling truth about, you know, everyday life sort of thing. So the way I'm able to make this blend where I can take this ghetto gospel to a Lollapalooza is that I sort of give it the realism that the church do not give. I talk about things that matter that the church won't talk about. I talk about sexuality. I talk about education and sexuality. I talk about health and sexuality. I talk about the problems that like my sister getting beat by her husband, who's the deacon in the church. You know, I talk about serious situations that people can relate to, that people been saying, hey, you know, religion is sort of, you know, compressing and suppressing and subjecting us to this sort of mentality, this sort of dogma.
Do you get pushback from that? I mean,
from the church?
But from the church, I mean, I don't want to say capital the church, but yeah. I mean, are there pushback for people who want to enjoy your music and enjoy it in the gospel sense that are saying, well, that the extra stuff that you just talked about, the message, or even talking about the taboo stuff, or even the language,
is that
excludes you from gospel?
Right. And I do that for a reason, because the people who really need to hear this gospel is not going to be in church. They haven't went to church in a long time. Their grandma went to church. Their mom kind of went to church. Them, they would prefer go to Lollapalooza than church on Sunday, which I'm glad I'm playing Sunday around noon, you know. It's sort of my church. Right. I would prefer Lollapalooza as a church than any church in Chicago. But with that, I don't mind the pushback. And when I get a pushback, I get it from like Jonathan McReynolds or over-religious, you know, artists. I don't get it from people that really need it. You know, I get it from people who are still sort of, you know, in the religious part of religion.
We're talking with Sir the Baptist, a hip hop, gospel, jazz artist who is performing at Lollapalooza. His new album, Preacher's Kid, comes out in August. He's going to be performing live here in Studio 435 after the 9 o'clock news. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Sir the Baptist.
Yes, sir.
Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman in Studio 435 tonight. Chicago-born hip-hop, jazz, gospel artist, Sir the Baptist, in studio with us
tonight.
Yes, sir. He's going to be performing live. The band is setting up as we speak. We're going to get some music right after the 9 o'clock news. Sir the Baptist is playing Lollapalooza this Sunday.
That's
his church. The new album, Preacher's Kid, comes out in August. You know, you grew up here in Chicago, and I read somewhere that you're getting close to moving.
Yeah,
that you're ready to leave. Talk about that.
Well, I have a few opportunities that's opening up for me to do this this in a big way. You know, behind the music is a mission, and I want to be the first hip hop chaplain for a sports team. And I have
What about that interest you as a musician?
Not as a musician, but as a guy that's on this mission, this life goal. I want to be able to spread this to people that's in love with the sports. And the way to do that is also be to cater to sportsmen that also need that sort of prayer or hands. Mm-hmm. Like I just did with Facebook. We went up to the Facebook headquarters. Mark Zuckerberg spoke. Then afterwards, we had sort of a unity circle where we held hands and talked about things that was needed in the community. So stuff like that will push the music, the mission past the music, will almost wake up the lyrics, you know, and give it some life and actually give it a life cycle. Because people listen to my lyrics and music and they just go, okay, you know,
there's definitely a message.
There's a message to it. But the lifestyle sort of wakes up the message and gives it a life cycle.
You know, there's spirituality, or at least perceived spirituality, in hip hop music.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there'll always be references to religion, and also you see in different cases, you know, religious symbolism, tattoos, or jewelry, things of that nature.
Yeah.
How much of that is to? And I've never questioned anyone's spirituality. I'm not talking specifically anyone, generic. But how much of that is marketing? How much of that is saying that, you know, they're marketing to people who may believe in spirituality?
I think it's part marketing. It's more so propaganda. You know, they're trying to embrace spirituality, but they're doing it in a very in a way that's sort of propaganda. You know, the big chain or the tattoo or the over the top things, instead of just embracing spirituality as it is and letting it be a part of your lifestyle. So it's not really about the how big of a chain you can have or how many diamonds you put into Jesus. You know, it's not about
diamonds
that.
Diamonds for Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Right, it's not about that, because then it just become propaganda. And where did those diamonds come from?
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of things we have to take under consideration that, you know, sadly, economics paired with lifestyle isn't really taught well in hip hop.
Well, I'm fascinated on the idea that I mean, you're on Atlantic Records, so uh-huh. you no longer, I guess, can be considered an independent artist in the sense
right.
that you're
right.
at a major label.
Right.
But, you know, as we talked about with Kanye West, and there has been a move towards gospel music hitting the mainstream. Think of Kirk Franklin or
right.
even Kanye West bringing it in, even Chance the Rapper as well.
Yeah.
Do you ride that wave in the sense that America is ready for spirituality front and center and the message front and center, and you don't have to do what's been done in the last 10, 20 years where when you're spiritual, you're like, push that to the back.
Right.
It's just some fun music. Push it. That could be the ninth track on this record.
Well, you know what? Ever since Ray Charles, and not to take anything away from Chance the Rapper, I think he's one of the dopest rappers out, or Kendrick Lamar, one of the dopest rappers out, or Kanye, previous to the craziness. Kanye was dope, you know? But I think they've been doing it for a long time, trying to find a balance between their creativeness and their spirituality. Back to Aretha Franklin, who was also signed to Warner, to Atlantic Records. She was also trying to find a way to balance spirituality
right.
and creativeness. Ray Charles, who was also on Atlantic Records, had this sort of battle between religion and, you know,
they were religious
yeah.
but in their core, and that's what they played. But when they got to the mainstream, they kind of shifted
right.
it up for record sales or whatever.
Right, right, right. right. But the way you find, because I can play a certain chord or play notes or sing things a certain way to surpass your reasoning stage, because spirituality is connected to it, is the root of that chord, is the root of that sound. It get to you. You don't know why you got chills, but you have chills. So the music industry is going to play off spirituality because it's intangible and it controls the mm-hmm. world. Everybody mm-hmm. in some sort of way, whether they're spiritual, Christian, Buddhist, Muslim,
right,
anything
right.
in some sort of way are connected to some religion or spirituality in some sort of way. So yes, people play off that for propaganda, but I prefer to give it some substance. So when I speak of my lyrics, they're not really about me. They're a little bit about what I've been through and attaching it to the message, but I'm always trying to give a message that's bigger than just my personal
yeah,
life.
Like a preacher.
Right, right, right. So I appreciate them opening the door in some sort of way, but what I'm trying to do is not rap. I'm trying to bring a lesson of spirituality and lifestyle to hip hop listeners in a way that hasn't been, I don't think it's been done before. Reverend Run could have done it. I would more so compare me to Reverend Run
right.
and have us do a battle of a rap battle. For, he probably would win. I would compare myself to Reverend Run than Chance the Rapper or Kendrick or anybody like that.
Right,
these guys
right.
are great rappers. I'm here on a mission that's spiritual.
Now, you know, we talked about the church side growing up in your dad's church,
mm-hmm.
but you went to Leo
yeah, yeah.
on the South Side, a Catholic school.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about the music, being able to mature and develop as a musician outside of the church. At what point, you know, because obviously through schooling or maybe it's private lessons, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, the church is going to take you so far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, I would sneak and listen to hip hop when my dad died because I couldn't relate to gospel anymore. Gospel wasn't, they would always sing songs like, everything's going to be all right, just stay there. And they really wouldn't say what they're going through to it for me to attach myself to it the way hip hop did or the way Eminem did or the way anybody did that was singing secular music and some, you know, with the quotations. But yeah, Leo Catholic helped, but also Leo Catholic was a Catholic school, religion still. You know, I went to a grammar school, Tabernacle Christian Academy, but it was still a Christian academy. So the way for me to escape religion in any sort of way was to really focus on just music that's outside of religion. And then I start working at Leo Burnett, which sort
right.
of really pulled me out of
that's religion. I mean, you I read that you were interested in music, you were doing music, and you did make a career change. You did. You worked in the digital office for Leo Burnett. What was that like? I mean, to be a religious kid and wanting to do your own music and work in the advertising world, was that a shift for you?
Yeah, it was. It was a shift in a way that let me know that people were still playing off of spirituality without being in a church. You know, when I put an ad up or I put certain colors with this or that.
Interesting.
It's all for a reason to play off of the intangibles to pull you to a dollar. So, you know, to give a dollar. And then when I got there, I looked at the church and then I went, oh, they do the same thing. They play off intangibles for you to give an offering. Okay, it's time to turn tables over everywhere. So I'm not looking, and that's why your piece up front was really important to me, because you said I wasn't looking for anybody to approve it. You know,
you're looking for forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need permission, right?
Yeah, yeah. Don't need permission in any sort of way. You know, before the label even came, we were doing this as if it was ministry. You know, because it is.
It's interesting. That's so interesting. You to be able to take that out of advertising.
Yeah.
And to be able to look through and recognize that whatever colors or whatever songs or notes or chords and all of it together is really with this goal of trying to get us to spend our money.
Right, across the board.
I mean, but I mean, for you to recognize that it's at such a young age and be able to work your music around those concepts, but at the same time, you know, kind of replace that with this sort of, instead of an offering, it's spirituality.
Yeah, yeah. It's
that's pretty crazy, man.
It's so needed. And you know what? Every day I wake up and I'm grateful for the journey that's been given to me. You know, I know this is something that we may haven't seen before. You know, to be, what does it mean to be the first hip hop, you know, bishop of the White House? What do you mean to be the first, you know, hip hop ambassador for the Christian faith and for the American people? What are you trying to say? Like, you know, I'm trying to, we've compartmentalized our lives so much to where we're this on Sunday and we're this Monday through Saturday, or we're this when we're at the club, or we're this when we're at church, or we're this in front of grandma and we're this with the homies, you know? So I'm just trying to blend those two, because it leaves room for a truth that we may haven't seen before.
It definitely, that message, you can hear it in your music.
Thank you.
And the music is interesting in itself. Talk about the band before we start, because we're going to take a break for the news in just a second. But you've brought together the church people. It adds to the mix in this way that, yes, there's message to the music, but there's also that rhythm, that energy that only you can find with gospel music.
Right. You know what? It kind of fell in my lap, you know? I didn't plan for the sound to grow into what it grew into. You know, Dez, who's the drummer and MD, he sort of just put this stuff around me as far as musicianship. And then the choir, it just grew. It's just people felt like, you know what, instead of singing on Sunday about something that wasn't really connecting to me, I want to sing about this at a place that's so cooler for me. You know, like, I think, like, there's people text me right now, hey, what are we wearing, you know, at Lollapalooza? Like, you know, they're excited to sing music. You know, when we sing at playing after Pearl Jam, which we did at Bonnaroo, it was a moment where you look in the crowd and you see people crying, enjoying, smiling, jumping, and saying amen. They're drunk, they're high, they're everything.
Everything. Sir the Baptist is my guest tonight. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get to the news. We'll come back and hear some live music with Sir the Baptist and church people. The new album is called Preacher's Kid, and they are playing Lollapalooza this weekend, Sunday. It's your church on
Hopefully
Sunday.
You come.
<I'm just enjoying>. All right, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Like I said, we're going to be covering Democratic National Convention, Bernie Sanders' speech coming up after 9:30. Right now in studio, Chicago-born rapper, hip-hop artist, gospel singer, jazz guy, Sir the Baptist. He's playing Lollapalooza this Sunday. His new album, Preacher's Kid, is coming out this month. Okay, we promised live music. The band is all set. You're set. What are we going to hear?
So the first, I'll play Raise Hell. And right. Raise Hell is just, it's a song about, it's a song about what's going on in a church, and how to sort of turn, last time Jesus was in a church, he turned over the tables. And that was the last time he was in a church. So this time I would like to turn over the tables for the last time I'm in a church.
All right. Sir the Baptist and church people in studio 435. Go ahead. Let's take it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh. WGN. Yeah, yeah. Mama say she gonna lose me. She pray to angels, I don't do that. Preacher can't even rebuke me. I'm born a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me. I'ma race hell until I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma race hell until I reach heaven's door. I'd have been to the water. I'd have been baptized. Now I need a new water. Sipping on a new wine. I know it's best for me, soda. I want heaven when I die, but there's this one thing that I can't seem to change. This my bad habit, you 9 to 5, and I've been that trapping. Worried even nerd strapped. We call that Inspector Gadget. When those ends meet, that's magic in that blood. That's that magic you've been living just to keep up. But tonight we about to, Mama say she gonna lose me. Yeah, she pray to angels, I don't do that. Hey, 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 preacher can't even rebuke me. What's that, y'all? I'm on a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me. Ha, ha. I'ma reach hell till I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me. Yeah. I'ma reach hell until I reach heaven's door. They don't wanna dance, man. They just wanna dance. They don't wanna hear me preach, boy. They just wanna dance, yeah. They don't wanna hear me preach, nah. They just wanna dance, yeah. They don't wanna hear me preach, nah. They just wanna dance, yeah. Mama say she gonna lose me. She pray to angels out on duty, yeah. Preacher can't even rebuke me. Born a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me. Yeah, yeah, I'ma raise hell till I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door.
Yeah! Give it up out there, hey, give it up. There we go. Look at all the people that are out here for Sir the Baptist. In studio here, Studio 435, here on WGN Radio, Sir the Baptist and Church People. Why don't you introduce the band?
Nice. Daz is my MD. He's got a mic over him. I don't know if he can. Daz. Yeah, Daz, he walked up to me after playing with Chance at Pitchfork, and he said, hey, listen, man, I want to meet with you. And I didn't know this guy at all. Until I realized later, hey, you know, I think we grew up around the same people, but played in church and was just like, yo, you know what? He asked his mom for permission. He was like, hey, mom, is this something that you think I should do? Because we grew up in a church, but his music is sort of like different. His mom gave him the blessing. So thanks to his mom, like this sound has grew to crazy levels. And Dez, this guy is an amazing guy. He's my brother now. Rob. On bass, great guy. Nobody can play like him in Chicago. And I've experienced, you know, playing with a lot of people, but these guys are untouched. Marshawn, most people call him Spirit Fingers. Because this guy, he literally...
Can I call you Spirit Fingers? good. I just want to make sure. cool like that.
literally just the guy, he know how to, back in when I grew up, my dad was preaching and everything, they would have someone play behind him. And the way he played remind me of what I used to hear when I was a little kid, wow, hear my dad preach. So it's easier for me to turn these festivals into church when you have a band that's amazing like that and know how to play off of the spirit of the crowd.
Sir the Baptist, the band Church People in studio. They're going to be at Lollapalooza this Sunday, around 12 noon. Their new album, Preacher's Kid, comes out in August on Atlantic Records. Okay, we'll take a break. Come back here one more.
Yeah,
sound
definitely.
Good. All right, stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Like I said, coming up here in about 10 minutes, we will make a transition, probably after the 9:30 news, to the coverage of the DNC tonight. Michelle Obama on stage now. Then I think it's Elizabeth Warren. Then it's Bernie Sanders. So we got some time, which is awesome because that means we can get another song in.
Yeah, man.
Here in Studio 435 from Sir the Baptist and his band Church People. They're playing Lollapalooza on Sunday. Also, the new album on Atlantic Records comes out in August. It's called Preacher's Kid. What are we going to hear here, sir?
So this is a song about Creflo Dollar, who's a preacher. He raised millions and millions of dollars and went and bought a private jet. And this isn't to talk down about him, but to use him as an example to mirror some of the economic problems we have in the community for hip hop. So this is me just telling them, hey, understand what economics is and how to use money to broaden a mission and not just to fill your ego.
All right, here's a song, Sir the Baptist, Church People in Studio 435. Take it away.
Said we're cruising in an unmarked Impala, looking for that almighty dollar. Pop the collar, feeling like Creflo Dollar, dollar bill, yeah. Ooh, dollar feel, yeah. One more time. I said I'm cruising in an unmarked Impala, looking for that almighty dollar. Pop the collar, feeling like Creflo Dollar, baby, dollar bill, yeah. Here's a letter to hip hop bill, yeah, yeah. What's the difference between $100 and a dollar bill? Not the ink, not the paper, that's real. That's why I'm knee bending in gators, seeking the face of God to get the George Newman bills for the face of. Is this why you lace up? Go and punch the clock. You fighting time. The more you win, the more you won't stop. That's why the rich is suicidal and the poor keep their dukes up. Pack a crowd, pack it out. They still think you a loser. Paper get low. Do the best you know. Work the block, I mean like all night. Back to back, packing back and forth. Try trapping on them fours. You could get your money so right. And that don't make it right. And that don't make it good. Just cause you need your lights don't mean cut them off in the hood. If lights on top of hoods catch you up to no good, just pray to death row bring you an angel that look like Shook. Oh, you tried that good living, want that good living. Drug dealing seems so freaking appealing. Look how they be flexing, make you wanna give in. Enough to make a grown man get stuck up in the kitchen, cooking up that soda. Bagging on the sofa, sell it to some crackheads then see you loosens up, bruh. Bleeding, hold your nose up, needles make your arms tough. Between a good Lord and luck, you on your way to church. Every cruising in an unmarked Impala, looking for that almighty dollar. I pop the collar, yeah, that's feeling like Creflo Dollar, baby, dollar bill, yeah. Taking him to church, dollar bill, yeah. Louis would say it like this.
Ah, I said I'm cruising in that unmarked Impala, yeah. Looking for that almighty dollar.
And pop the collar, be the loot and did loop, bill, yeah. Dollar bill, yeah. One more time.
time for this Holy Ghost. Here we go. 1, 2. Cruising in that unmarked Impala. Hey, hey, looking for that almighty dollar. Up up the collar. I said I'm feeling like Creflo Dollar, baby, dollar, dollar bill, yeah. He only out here for the dollar. Hey, 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 the dollar, dollar bill, yeah. Oh, 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 dollar, dollar, dollar bill, yeah.
Yeah! Live in Studio 435, Sir the Baptist, what do you think out there? Woo, there you go. Get some... There you go. All right. Sir, the Baptist Church people in Studio 435 tonight.
Thank you.
The album Preacher's Wife will be out this August. Also, they'll be playing Lollapalooza this Sunday. Not bad for a kid from Bronzeville, huh? So, all of these things are coming together. I mean, this is just the beginning. You have more shows coming up here.
Yeah.
I mean, what's next for you? I mean, does the music stop if you move from Chicago and you start doing the hip-hop chaplain stuff? Does the music stop?
No. I just get a chance to take this music in places that they usually don't want spiritual music or hip-hop music or anything like that. So I just get to take it a little bit of everywhere with me. But we're playing Bonner, we're playing Afro-punk, we're playing New Orleans, Made in America with Jay-Z, mm-hmm. which they've shown me so much love. We're on a festival run for at least the next 3 months. So.
For you, like I said, like a kid from Bronzeville, to think about being on that festival tour with all the places you're playing from Lollapalooza on, what's the feeling?
The feeling is amazing. It's just, it's humbling in the way of saying that, you know, if you make it a little less about you and more about the culture and what you could bring to it in the community, that God will make room for you in everything that you want to do. And also just be honest. You know, that's the one thing I think we're missing in the church is honesty from a point of view where everybody can feel like, hey, even if you got on that robe or the clergy collar, that you're still going through the same things that I'm going through, and we can talk some, you know, day-to-day stuff.
Sir the Baptist, a pleasure to have you here in
Thank
studio.
You, man.
Congrats
Thank you.
On all your
Thank
success.
You. Yes,
and
sir.
Thanks for being at Studio 435.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. All right, it's the download here on 720 WGN. Exciting. That was great. What a great performance from Sir the Baptist here live in studio. We make our transition now to Philadelphia. Elizabeth Warren, Senator from Massachusetts, on stage right now. And Senator Bernie Sanders speaking next. In Philadelphia with ABC News tonight, he's new to the radio, so give him some love. Rokan, of course, in the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. You're in the arena. Rokan, what's been happening tonight?
Well, we've had a lot of speakers. We've seen some things. We've seen some good. We've seen some bad. There's been some ugly. It's really awkward, actually. There's no other way to put it. The weirdest moment was Sarah Silverman.
Mm-hmm.
She came up with Al Franken, right? And you figure these are two comedians by trade, right? So they're going to – and one of them turned into a senator. And I don't know what happened to Al Franken. So what they did is they get up there, did this like thing, it's like a little shtickle, and then she delivered her speech, and she extolled all of the Bernie Sanders people to come out and vote, and then they booed her, and then she got all kind of a little sideways with them, and then he came back out, and she's like, well, they're telling me to stretch, so we're just going to stretch because we're waiting for Paul Simon to come on stage, and Paul Simon, you know, was like late. I don't know what he was doing.
Gosh.
I mean, what could he be possibly doing? And so then she stopped and she says, do you know, all of you Bernie Sanders people who are like, never Hillary, you people are ridiculous.
Oh, no.
And then, oh, God, I got
ugly. She treated it like a comedy like crowd.
Yeah.
And she like turned on her hecklers.
Yeah, she did. And that was ugly. And she's a Bernie person, right? She's like
she was,
Bernie
yeah.
Person.
She was a big time.
So she says she still is. She's, you know, she's got to do the right thing by America, man. Then Paul Simon came out and he was completely off key. It was awful. It was, and I love him. I mean, it was just a moment.
I didn't see it.
Oh,
darn
God.
It.
Oh, Dad, it's like one of the worst vocal performances in history.
Maybe he was backstage, you know, taking care of some business, and they're like, Paul, you got to get up here. And he's like, I haven't warmed up. Oh, who cares?
I'll tell you what happened. You know, Bill Clinton's in the room here now. And it was, and he's like, probably, he's like, you know what, Paul? Let's talk about a few things. And they're back there discussing chicks or something. And he won't let him go.
Right.
And he's waiting for him and waiting. And Sarah Silverman's eating it on stage.
I gotta go,
and
Bill.
For him. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you know what? Now another thing. You know that time that you and I were in Hong Kong together? Do you remember that? And it's like, what? You did? Come on, let him go.
Elizabeth Warren on stage now. Mm-hmm. Does she introduce Bernie, or is she just going to do her speech and then somebody else comes out?
Joseph P. Kennedy III introduced her. Hmm. It's all, you always have to have another generation of a Kennedy. It's a it's a Democratic
convention.
It's
a tradition, right?
Right. Since 1960, always a Kennedy. So this is what happened for her. She's making a pretty traditional speech. The most interesting thing here tonight, Justin, is the fact that people have been sitting. No one stood up. Cory Booker tried to get him to stand up. They didn't really stand up.
Really?
The most passionate speech so far has been Michelle Obama. She knocked it out of the park. And it was very political, too. She talked about how you can't, you know, this is not about black and white. Anybody who has the nuclear codes can't really reduce his emotions to 140 characters.
It's that kind of a thing.
And so I smushed a few things there together, but that's essentially what
now,
she's saying.
Now, with Bernie Sanders really the only speaker left after Elizabeth Warren, have they successfully wiped the taste from the mouth at the beginning, the stumble at the beginning of this convention with the booze, or is it still there, it's still lingering?
No, I'm telling you, right now, I'm looking down on the floor, and everyone is sitting. People are, Elizabeth Warren is not bringing people to their feet. This, by the way, is a very rough first night. It depends on what Bernie does here. I'm going to tell you something. When Bernie takes to the stage, and I'm not trying to program your show, Justin, but I'm telling you, you should probably take it live. It's coming down from our friends at ABC News. Because what happens around here, the theatrics around here, and I'll check back with you after it's all over, but the theatrics here are going to be something, because there's going to be booing, there's going to be applauding. The Hillary people won't boo Bernie.
I can't wait.
But the Bernie people are, and they are, you know what, I think there's a technical term for this, pissed. That's the term. And they feel like they have been ripped off, and they are very, very, very upset about it.
Well, we'll see how this.
Letting everybody know.
We'll see how this plays out. Ro Khan is live, covering for the National for the ABC News. He checks in with us, the little guys. We appreciate that. Bro.
Yeah, you know the little. I'm always about the little people.
You've always been about the little people. Ro Khan, obviously broadcasting live from Philadelphia all week. We'll check in with you after Bernie speaks. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, man. Thanks, Rob. Yeah, exciting. The Democratic National Convention underway, obviously, day one. A little stumble out of the gate, and they now have their speakers, as Ro said, sort of coming out and trying to rile up this crowd. Speakers like Cory Booker, also First Lady Michelle Obama, Joseph Kennedy III, and then now Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts. It's an interesting lineup. You know, Rob Martyr's here. It's interesting to me because there's a lot of heavyweights. And Dave Lundy said it. It was almost like they gave the more progressive wing of the party to day one.
I think it's a smart move. I mean, if you're trying to build this lineup pre-convention, you're taking a look at the rift that's existed between Sanders and Clinton, and you've got to try to find some way to bridge that gap, because as we've seen on night one of this convention in Philadelphia, there's still a wide swath to cover here between Sanders supporters and Clinton supporters.
Yeah.
So I think throwing out the ultra left of the party right now is probably not a bad idea. Is it having any effect? Michelle Obama seemed to have a very nice speech. I listened to most of it. She did well. It was very well received. Elizabeth Warren, I'm not so sure. Al Franken and Sarah Silverman, that was kind of wonky, but here we are.
Well, this is, I mean, I am loving, as a political junkie and someone who enjoys the spirit of a finely worded attack tweet. Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren, it doesn't get any better.
Oh, yeah.
The two of them have been at each other. I mean, even on the day, I think it was Friday at night and Saturday, Donald Trump tweeted out Pocahontas, that's his nickname for her, mm-hmm. which nobody finds offensive, but I guess it's okay. I'm like, that's so weird that you call a sitting senator by a nickname. But anyway, he says, Pocahontas, so sorry you didn't get picked. Hillary doesn't like you. Was a tweet. I'm like, what is this? It's like 9-year-old stuff. And she writes back and she's like, hey, Donald, don't worry about it. I'm right where I want to be, telling everybody about what a liar you are, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's almost like they're, you know, he's the candidate. She's just a surrogate attacking him. I don't know, man. It's really fun Twitter to watch, but it's also kind of surreal to think that this is happening at the highest levels of political, you know,
but this is great though. I mean, it's great for us. Obviously, we love it. We love the sound bites. We love the stories. But mm-hmm. it's a purge. It's a cleansing. You know, you need to go through this every so often because, you know, tension builds and you've got to let the air out a little bit. So yeah. I think on both sides, Republican and Democratic, this is a lot of fun to watch. And I personally don't mind it. I think it's great.
Warren just said, and ABC News just tweeted it out, other than talking about building a stupid wall, did you hear anything about his ideas? Like, that's what I'm saying. She's so Trump's entire campaign is just another late night Trump infomercial. That's what she's saying. She's kind of funny. I like Elizabeth Warren because she does have that kind of she is colorful in her attack of Donald Trump. So.
Yeah, she's fire and brimstone. I mean, I read a couple of things leading up to tonight that there were some calls from those along Wall Street saying that if to Hillary Clinton before she made the announcement of Tim Kaine, that if she picked Elizabeth Warren as the running mate, there would be no money coming from Wall Street. Which I found interesting.
I know that is interesting, and that's you know, I think at the end of the day, what my misgivings about the candidates that are running for president, Hillary Clinton being one of them, is how they are so manipulated by campaign money, the status quo. Even Donald Trump, I mean, he'll run on the thing, but it is important to him to, you know, to have these sort of really traditional or powerful relationships, as we see with Putin. But the concept being that they all sort of feed from the hand of power. And Hillary Clinton's the same way, in the sense that she would be riled up or she would make a decision to not have Elizabeth Warren on her ticket because someone is threatening her, you know, to not give the campaign money. And it's just like, yeah, I guess that's true. But at a certain point, you would just hope that doesn't play into the decisions being made for candidates who are going to run our country. You know, I as a voter and as a constituent, as a citizen of this great nation, I don't want it to be transparent that my needs are second to people with huge amounts of money. I mean, that's the problem with that. It's like it's a little too transparent for me. At least lie there. I'm okay with you lying in that regard. That no, I don't care about the big money. I care about the little guy. Lie there. That's where I want the lies. So.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. I mean, they all do it. You know, one's not better than the other.
That's what I like Bernie Sanders, though. I did enjoy the fact that at least he turned, in this campaign, he turned campaign financing on its head. Everyone gave $10, $15. He didn't take money from the big dogs. You know, he had, when he did his tax returns, it was all pieces of yellow legal paper on his
table. Post-it notes. Yeah.
But, I mean, there was something refreshing where you could take a breath or you know, and not inhale the stench that is American politics, because Bernie Sanders was doing that. Well, and I would even say that on the other side too, Donald Trump, in his own weird way, did the same thing where he just, I don't know if it was offered to him the money, but he decided he was going to finance it himself.
Well, you know, it to your point, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but there are more millionaires in Congress and the Senate now than there have ever been in the history of American politics.
And that blows my mind.
Yeah.
And they're not self-made millionaires. That's what kills me, is it's not like they worked really hard and they became millionaires and they decided to be congressmen.
Rahm Emanuel didn't go out and build a company.
Right.
You know, he went to Congress, came back, did some private investing and some equity stuff and whatever else he was doing in finance. But it wasn't like he started a company and you know, put out the shingle and took that risk.
How about Rahm Emanuel?
I mean,
wow.
I mean,
Demi Lovato was on stage tonight. Sarah Silverman and Al Franken were asked to stretch.
Yeah.
There's no room for Rahm Emanuel to speak, not even on Wednesday at 2:30 about what's for lunch. He couldn't be the guy to say, hey, everybody, I just want to let you know they got the new nacho stand over here. And check out, like, there's just no room for him. He's just persona non grata.
Food trucks in Chicago.
Right. And what does that mean for Chicago?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the one thing, is that the mayor is a representative of the town. So does that mean that Hillary Clinton, let's say that she goes on to become the president of the United States, does that continue?
But honestly,
Rahm Emanuel doesn't have any clout. He doesn't have any political clout, so we get nothing out of Washington.
But here you are, right? You're putting together the Democratic National Convention, okay? Right. Do you honestly want anyone from the state, from the city, and from the county of Cook up on that stage? I mean, our politicians collectively have driven this state, city, and county into the ground.
Yeah.
The last thing you need is any sort of that kind of tie-in with Hillary Clinton and the Democratic machine here in this state.
I know that Daley was the he was the chairman of the Democratic Party, so he'd gavel in for the Illinois breakfast and things like that. Did Daley do a lot of speaking at conventions? I can't remember if he was a big speaker, like if he'd be at 7 o'clock.
Ooh, Squeaky?
Yeah, Squeaky.
Yeah, I don't recall that he did.
I mean, he probably did at certain points. Yeah, exactly. Not prime time. Maybe he was up there for a second reading the teleprompter, but reading it, missing the punctuation, my favorite thing that mayor would do. In this times, we need to work on how we are going to work together, and then we need to, and you're like, there was a period there somewhere. You ran that whole sentence. You just missed it. That's so funny. And then you'd stop in the middle of the next sentence. Because you realized it, and you're like, wow, you're not even speaking English. Like, I don't even know what you're doing. That's awesome. How'd you get this far in life? You're the mayor of Chicago. That's awesome.
That leverage, baby. Awesome. It's all about leverage.
That's awesome. Back in the day when it didn't matter if you could speak the language. Now all these eloquent speakers have to get up there, you know. And it's not even enough for one language. Tim Kaine's got to jump into Spanish, too, eloquently. He's got to do it in an eloquent way. So we're all like, oh, that's impressive. It's not only impressive that you know Spanish, but it's more impressive of how just just romantic the way he says it.
Well, Elizabeth Warren has just wrapped up her speech. Right. So I think we've got kind of a bridge, and then Bernie Sanders, who I think they're probably going to have to wake up.
Yeah. Why
don't... He just got back from the Golden Corral senior discount at the buffet.
He's backstage getting messed with. All right, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Bernie Sanders will be live from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Stay with us. This is a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're covering the Democratic National Convention tonight. Coming up here, we'll hear from Vermont Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, who will take the stage. We'll see if this is similar to what happened with Ted Cruz, if Senator Sanders goes as far as to endorse Hillary Clinton, which he has done in certain ways, but he also has pulled back, as we talked about in Touche. We'll see what the tenor and the tone of his speech is as he delivers his speech on day one of the Democratic National Convention, which has been met with a lot of different boos and emotions from what has been described to be a very tense floor at the Democratic National Convention. So they are doing a DNC video right now that's introducing Bernie Sanders. He's going to take the stage momentarily. Again, Bernie Sanders speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. We're going to take it to that speech, and then afterwards, we're going to hear from our WGN radio team, including Ro Khan, who is broadcasting reporting from ABC News tonight. Also, Tracy Seffel and Dave Lundy are going to join us, both Democratic analysts, and we are going to hear from some others tonight, including some Bernie delegates from the state of Illinois. So that's all coming up in the 10 o'clock hour here after Bernie speaks to the convention. It's a big speech because he can rile up his core. He can tamp down his core. He can do a lot to the momentum and the fervor and the tone of tonight's convention. All right. The Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia just about ready to introduce Bernie Sanders. Rob, I see him coming to the stage. Lots of signs that say Bernie, a future to believe in. Bernie.
There he is, making his way to the podium right now. Let's just go ahead and listen in at the convention floor.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. It is an honor. Thank you. Thank you very much. It is an honor to be here tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. It is an honor to be here tonight and to be following in the footsteps of my good friend Elizabeth Warren, and to be here tonight to thank Michelle Obama for her incredible service to our country. She has made all of us proud. Let me begin by thanking the hundreds of thousands of Americans who actively participated in our campaign as volunteers. Thank you. Let me thank the 2.5 million Americans who helped fund our campaign with an unprecedented 8 million individual campaign contributions. Anyone know what that average contribution was? Right. $27. And let me thank the 13 million Americans who voted for the political revolution. Giving us the 1,846 pledged delegates here tonight. And delegates, thank you for being here. And thank you for all the work you have done. I look forward to your votes during the roll call tomorrow night. And let me offer a special thanks to the people of my own state of Vermont who have sustained me and supported me as a mayor, congressman, senator, and presidential candidate. And to my family, my wife Jane, our four kids and seven grandchildren, thank you very much. I understand that many people here in this convention hall and around the country are disappointed about the final results of the nominating process. I think it's fair to say that no one is more disappointed than I am. But to all of our supporters here and around the country, I hope you take enormous pride in the historical accomplishments we have achieved. Together, my friends, we have begun a political revolution to transform America, and that revolution, our revolution, continues. Election days come and go, but the struggle of the people to create a government which represents all of us and not just the 1%. A government based on the principles of economic, social, racial, and environmental justice, that struggle continues. And I look forward to being part of that struggle with you. Let me be as clear as I can be. This election is not about and has never been about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders or any of the other candidates who sought the presidency. This election is not about political gossip. It's not about polls. It's not about campaign strategy. It's not about fundraising. It is not about all the things that the media spends so much time discussing. This election is about and must be about the needs of the American people and the kind of future we create for our children and our grandchildren. This election is about ending the 40-year decline of our middle class. The reality that 47 million men, women, and children today live in poverty. It is about understanding that if we do not transform our economy, our younger generation will likely have a lower standard of living than their parents. This election is about ending the grotesque level of income and wealth inequality in America today. It is not moral, it is not acceptable, and it is not sustainable that the top 0.1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. Or that the top 1% in recent years has earned 85% of all new income. That is unacceptable. That must change. This election is about remembering where we were 7.5 years ago when President Obama came into office after 8 years of Republican trickle-down economics. The Republicans want us to forget that as a result of the greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior on Wall Street, our economy was in the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. That's where we were. That is where we were. Some 800,000 people a month were losing their jobs. 800,000 people. We were running up a record-breaking deficit of $1.4 trillion. And by the way, the world's financial system was on the verge of collapse. That's where we were when President Obama came into office. Well, we have come a long way in the last 7.5 years, and I thank President Obama and Vice President Biden. I thank them for their leadership in pulling us out of that terrible recession. Yes, we have made progress, but I think we can all agree that much, much more needs to be done. This election is about which candidate understands the real problems facing this country and has offered real solutions. Not just bombast, not just fear-mongering, not just name-calling and divisiveness. We need leadership in this country which will improve the lives of working families, the children, the elderly, the sick, and the poor. We need leadership which brings our people together and makes us stronger. Not leadership which insults Latinos and Mexicans, insults Muslims and women, African Americans and veterans, and seeks to divide us up. By these measures, any objective observer will conclude that based on her ideas and her leadership, Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States. The choice This election is about a single mother, a single mom I saw in Nevada, who with tears in her eyes told me she was scared to death about the future because she and her daughter were not making it on the $10.45 an hour she was earning. This election is about that woman and the millions of other workers in this country who are struggling to survive on totally inadequate wages. Hillary Clinton understands that if someone in this country works 40 hours a week, that person should not be living in poverty. She understands that we must raise the minimum wage to a living wage. And she is determined to create millions of new jobs by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, bridges, water systems, and wastewater plants. But her opponent, Donald Trump, well, he has a very different point of view. He does not support raising the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, a starvation wage. While Trump believes in huge tax breaks, huge tax breaks for billionaires, he believes that states should actually have the right to lower the minimum wage below $7.25. Brothers and sisters, this election is about overturning Citizens United. Citizens United is one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of our country. That decision allows the wealthiest people in America, like the billionaire Koch brothers, to spend hundreds of millions of dollars buying elections and in the process undermine American democracy. Hillary Clinton will nominate justices to the Supreme Court who are prepared to overturn Citizens United. And end the movement toward oligarchy that we are seeing in this country. Her Supreme Court appointments will also defend a woman's right to choose. Workers' rights, the rights of the LGBT community, the needs of minorities and immigrants, and the government's ability to protect our environment. If you don't believe that this election is important, if you think you can sit it out, take a moment to think about the Supreme Court justices that Donald Trump would nominate. And what that would mean to civil liberties, equal rights, and the future of our country. This election is about the thousands of young people I have met all over this country the thousands that I have met who left college deeply in debt, and tragically, the many others who cannot afford to go to college. During the primary campaign, Secretary Clinton and I both focused on this issue, but with somewhat different approaches. Recently, however, we have come together on a proposal that will revolutionize higher education in America. It will guarantee that the children of any family in this country with an annual income of $125,000 a year or less, 83% of our population will be able to go to a public college or university tuition free. That proposal also substantially reduces student debt. This election is about climate change, the great environmental crisis facing our planet, and the need to leave this world in a way that is healthy and habitable for our children and future generations. Hillary Clinton is listening to the scientists who tell us that unless we act boldly to transform our energy system in the very near future, there will be more drought, more floods, more acidification of the oceans, more rising sea levels. She understands that we can create hundreds of thousands of jobs transforming our energy system. Donald Trump, well, like most Republicans, he chooses to reject science. He believes that climate change is a hoax, no need to address it. Hillary Clinton understands that a president's job is to worry about future generations, not the profits of the fossil fuel industry. This campaign is about moving the United States toward universal health care. And reducing the number of people who are uninsured or underinsured. Hillary Clinton wants to see that all Americans have the right to choose a public option in their health care exchange. She believes that anyone 55 or older should be able to opt in to Medicare. And she wants to see millions more Americans gain access to primary health care, dental care, mental health counseling, low-cost prescription drugs through a major expansion of community health centers. And what is Donald Trump's position on health care? Well, no surprise there. Same old Republican contempt for working families. He wants to abolish the Affordable Care Act, throw 20 million people off of health insurance, and cut Medicaid for lower-income Americans. Hillary Clinton also understands that millions of seniors, disabled vets, and others are struggling with the outrageously high cost of prescription drugs. and the fact that Americans pay the highest prices in the world for the medicine we use. She knows that Medicare must negotiate drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry. And that drug companies should not be making billions in profit when one out of five Americans are unable to afford the medicine they need. The greed of the drug companies must end. This election is about the leadership we need to pass comprehensive immigration reform and repair a broken criminal justice system. It's about making sure that young people in this country are in good schools and at good jobs, not rotting in jail cells. Hillary Clinton understands that we have to invest in education and jobs for our young people, not more jails or incarceration. In these stressful times for our country, this election must be about bringing our people together, not dividing us up. While Donald Trump is busy insulting one group after another, Hillary Clinton understands that our diversity is one of our greatest strengths. Yes, we become stronger when black and white, Latino, Asian American, Native American, when all of us stand together. Yes, we become stronger when men and women, young and old, gay and straight, Native born and immigrant, fight together to create the kind of country we all know we can become. It is no secret that Hillary Clinton and I disagree on a number of issues. That is what this campaign has been about. That is what democracy is about. But I'm happy to tell you that at the Democratic Platform Committee, there was a significant coming together between the two campaigns, and we produced by far the most progressive platform in the history of the Democratic Party. Among many, many other strong provisions, the Democratic Party now calls for breaking up the major financial institutions on Wall Street. And the passage of a 21st century Glass-Steagall Act. It also calls for strong opposition to job-killing trade agreements like the TPP.
You are listening to Senator Bernie Sanders address the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Does not get to the floor of the Congress in the lame duck session. Our job now is to see that strong Democratic platform implemented by a Democratic-controlled Senate? By a Democratic House and a Hillary Clinton presidency? And I am going to do all that I can to make that happen. I have known Hillary Clinton for 25 years. I remember her, as you do, as a great first lady who broke precedent in terms of the role that a first lady was supposed to play as she helped lead the fight for universal health care. I served with her in the United States Senate and know her as a fierce advocate for the rights of children, for women, and for the disabled. Hillary Clinton will make an outstanding president, and I am proud to stand with her tonight. Thank you all very much.
So there you have it. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, a revolutionary maybe, Justin? Just wrapping up his speech at the Democratic National
Convention.
I was
hoping you'd keep that music going, a little jazz. They got something going on there. it's
taking it to the streets.
Taking it to
Doobie
the
Brothers, street. Yeah. Why not? You know? I mean, what they should have done was had Paul Simon, who sang earlier tonight at the RNC, singing Hello Darkness, My Old Friend.
That would have been appropriate. Yeah. Rabbi Julie Schoenfeld. Okay, well, Bernie Sanders speaks at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Now we turn to analysis and reaction to one of the speeches tonight that obviously is going to stand out. Senator Bernie Sanders, who led a fierce campaign in the primary, Democratic primary for president, all the way down to the line, there was thoughts of a brokered convention. We knew this weekend of a conspiracy or the Democratic National Committee conspiring against Bernie Sanders. And yet he takes the stage at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia and delivers what is only to be known as a huge endorsement for Hillary Clinton. This was not Ted Cruz style. The idea that this was for Bernie Sanders to rile up his troops and only his troops. He definitely came out and did his job to support the impending nominee, Hillary Clinton. All right, we'll take a break. We will come back with more here covering the Democratic National Convention and Bernie Sanders' speech. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman covering the Democratic National Convention. Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, just spoke. We're going to wrap up our analysis and reaction coming up here after Rob's news. Ro Khan's going to join us from the arena in Philadelphia. We're also going to talk with Tracy Seffel. Tracy, a longtime Clinton staffer and supporter, who's also she's a regular on the Downloads Touche. She's here on Monday nights. She comes on. She is in Philadelphia, so she'll give us an update from her vantage point about what was up, what was down, what was strange, what was good, all that kind of stuff from the night. Also tonight, Dave Lundy will join to give reaction and analysis. He watched all the speeches tonight while we were doing the show. Does that sound good? Okay, so that's coming up. We will continue our coverage of the Democratic National Convention tonight. Bernie Sanders brings the heat and says, he pretty much says that he's going to do all that he can to make Hillary Clinton the next president of the United States. He does that in front of an audience that it sometimes cheered and sometimes jeered when Hillary Clinton's name was said. Of course, tomorrow, the roll call and the nomination, we will see how that plays out. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, big speeches, but before we get to that, breaking news. The Chicago White Sox winning a walk-off bottom of the ninth double or single for Tyler Saladino, who drives in, I think it was Shuck on second base. New lefty Mike Montgomery gives up the game. Aroldis Chapman, he comes tomorrow for the team. So tonight the Chicago White Sox take game one of the Crosstown Cup. All right, let's go to Ro Khan. Ro Khan standing by in Philadelphia. Ro, tonight, big night. Bernie Sanders, did he do what needed to be done to unify this party?
I'd say it was a walk-off single for him. I wouldn't call it a home run. I would say that he did well, but, you know, there was a lot of his own agenda there. Basically what Bernie Sanders did tonight was he used his own stump speech and he just inserted Hillary Clinton believes in front of every sentence instead of what he was going to say. So it was a way that he was able to sort of insert her into what it was that his voters want to hear. Now, you know, we talked on the ABC News show, we talked to some people down in the Bernie supporters down in amongst the delegates, and they're like, hey, she doesn't own our vote. They're still standing firm.
You know, let me ask you, because there was tremendous, you know, comparisons between what Bernie Sanders did tonight and Ted Cruz did in Cleveland, in the sense that Bernie Sanders mentioned Hillary Clinton's name 15, 20 times to Ted Cruz saying Donald Trump once. For a runner-up to come out and show this kind of support, it does say something about what they're going to do as a Democratic Party moving forward.
Well, he did make it mostly about her. I mean, it was about his – even though it was in his his words, it was – and using his phraseology, he would say that she supported it, right? Mm-hmm. But he was just trying to put a stamp of approval on her campaign. And you know, to the most part, I think it worked. Where are the Bernie Sanders people going to go? I mean, other than to say, hey, we'll stay at home, and what we're going to do is wait for Donald Trump to become president, and if we don't die in a thermonuclear crisp within the first 3.5 years, maybe we'll elect somebody that we like. And I don't know that that's actually the kind of deal that the Bernie Sanders people are going to make. And I'll tell you what's going to happen here, too, is that Democrats, when you watch Bill Clinton get up there tomorrow night and do what he does best, even though he's, you know, a little more and a little slower and seemingly more elderly in his delivery, he's still going to own the room.
Right.
And when he does that, there's going to be a sense of unity, because he just does that for Democrats. He's got that sort of special sauce. And that, pardon the expression. And so that's going to be that's going to be something for him that it's going to be, I think, for the party, is going to be particularly good.
Well, Bernie Sanders tonight mentioning to his crowd in the room, obviously talking about he's excited for the roll call tomorrow, but he also mentioned...
Well, that's important.
Yeah,
can
it is
stop
important.
Stop you on that point
yeah.
for a second, because yeah. that's really important what he did. What he's doing there is he's dog whistling. We use that term too much, but he's indicating to his supporters, hey, listen, I'm still officially a candidate here. My name is entered into nomination. I want to have the full roll call. We want to take all the states, including all the W states at the end, after Vermont, that he did particularly well in and he won. And they want to do it so that he stays alive. Now, within seconds of the end of his speech, emails to his supporters went out that said he's starting a new organization that is going to be to keep his revolution moving forward. So he is, you know, he wants to be a player here, at least, you know, simultaneously benefiting from the anti-Trump swell that he can do, but also he wants to be a player moving forward in 18 and in 20 and 22 and 24.
Right. Well, I mean, interesting night. I mean, it started off with a stumble. It, Michelle Obama had seemed to hit one out of the park.
She did,
between kind of did okay. But again, at the end, Bernie Sanders comes through with a big speech to try to unify the party. What do you guys have on the show tomorrow? I don't even know why I asked about tomorrow. What's on tap for tonight?
Well, we got to head out now. That's a really good question. You know, because it's going to be really fascinating to see.
Well, you guys are on when the roll call goes, right?
Yes, we will be.
That's the fun part,
right? We've booked this this week a little lighter than we booked the Republicans because there's just so much theater going on. And there is a lot of daytime programming here in the convention itself. One of the interesting things about Trump is he wasn't able to fill the hours of the convention. Right? He started putting his own guys in. Right?
His own family, right.
That's how you get a guy referring to himself as an anchovy on a Caesar salad. That's because he's, or his friends. Right. So what we have here is really much more standard, much more predictable, and the, you know, the kinds of things that these conventions are all about. So, so there will be a lot of people and a lot of the theatrics and mechanics and all that. And we're just kind of playing it by the seat of our pants here because I think that that's anything can happen here. Tomorrow the roll call will be fascinating. And then once that's over and it's basically for her, then, of course, you're going to have, you know, the vice presidential night on Wednesday, and then you, you have the big night for her on Thursday.
That's going to be huge. Well, Rokon and Anna DeVlantes live in Philadelphia. You can check the show all tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday. You come back Friday, or do you stay there?
We're scheduled to appear on Friday at WGN, so I don't know. It's on the schedule. I don't know. I don't know that we're gonna. That's really dependent upon a lot of other exogenous factors, but we plan to do it. Yeah.
Well, Ro, have a great night tonight. I can't wait to get the full update tomorrow after the show.
I'll show you the pictures on my phone that don't make it to Twitter.
Appreciate it, Ro. Thanks, and great job today.
Thanks.
Rokon checking in from the stadium in Philadelphia where the Democratic National Convention. Bernie Sanders just wrapped up. Let's go to Dave Lundy. Dave Lundy watching the speech from here in Chicago. He joins me now. He's the better half on Touche that we hear every Monday here. Dave, what'd you think of Bernie Sanders' speech tonight?
Well, he's no Ted Cruz, that's for sure. Didn't exactly hear him say "vote your conscience." I heard him say that Hillary was the choice. That Hillary, if you care about the issues, you'll vote for Hillary. I mean, honestly, it was as good as anybody could have asked for.
So, talk about the issues that he talked. You know, I mean, last week we saw with Ted Cruz, he really went through the litany of issues that really he wanted to see on the conservative agenda for Donald Trump. Today or tonight, Bernie Sanders talked about similar issues that he wanted to see Hillary Clinton trumpet, like Supreme Court justice, Citizens United. He took on universal health care, the fossil fuel industry, and other things. But it sounded like he sort of put the list together of the things that he wanted to see. He and his followers wanted to see the campaign move with.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between tonight and Ted Cruz is that, you know, Donald Trump is not a conservative. He's not close to a conservative. In fact, I'm not sure he has any ideology other than Trump. But whereas, you know, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, while there are differences, because Bernie's, you know, definitely more on the left end of the spectrum, the overwhelming majority of these issues are common Democratic issues: overturning Citizens United, right to choose, recognition that climate change is actually real and that you're going to do something about it. I mean, this is the center of the meat, you know, for Democrats. And so, you know, I think the point that Bernie was making to his supporters, many of whom are, you know, very vocal and continue to be vocal. I mean, I could not believe that they were booing Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren. She was Bernie before Bernie was Bernie. And they were booing Elizabeth Warren. And it wasn't a lot of people, but it was enough that it was annoying. And they got shushed in the hall. But, you know, because what the point Bernie was making is that if you care about these things, you have a binary choice. You vote for Hillary Clinton or you vote for Donald Trump. And I think that that's the case that needed to be made. And most people, including most of Bernie's supporters, will come along with that. We'll recognize the logic of what he's saying.
What was the highlight for you tonight, watching the speeches on the first day of the DNC?
Oh, it's hard to argue that Michelle was not the highlight. I mean, her speech was fabulous. She was masterful. She's got a great touch. She's got a great tone. I mean, that was just a tremendous speech. I look forward to hearing it out of Melania in 4 years. It'll be harder with the accent, but I think Michelle really just delivered a phenomenal speech. Frankly, Elizabeth Warren was flat. I think that, you know, I've heard Elizabeth Warren give an, oh my God, you're forced to stand on your feet and applaud. And And tonight was okay. It was a good speech, but it was not anything that anybody's going to remember. And Bernie, you know, Bernie gave a speech that a lot of people were kind of fixated on Twitter, that for the first, 10, 15 minutes or so, it was all about Bernie and his campaign. But, you know, at a certain point in the speech, he pivoted, and then he just gave a tremendously effective endorsement of Hillary Clinton. I think tonight, as I said in the 7 o'clock hour, this entire night was about getting as many Bernie folks as possible on board, and putting the ugliness of the beginning of the day behind us. And I think Bernie, really did that effectively.
So moving forward, I mean, tomorrow, it seems tomorrow is really all about the roll call and the nomination. Last week, we kind of saw the Republicans try to do effectively to shut down the process. That doesn't look to be what's going to happen tomorrow. Bernie Sanders going to get his day on the floor. Do you expect anything to go awry, or is this just the normal tradition of the Democratic politics at a convention?
It's the normal tradition. I mean, what's funny is that with the way the elections have gone this year, everybody's like, in fact, I remember Roebling saying on the show, "Oh well, we're not organized. We're not like the Democrats." And I'm like, guys, for decades, you guys are the organized people. We're the ones that Will Rogers said, "I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat." So the fact that there is a little dissent here and there, that's normal. Right. But I contrast tonight to both the Ted Cruz thing, but also to 1980. A lot of people have been talking about 1980 and Ted Kennedy, who did not give a full-throated endorsement to Jimmy Carter. He gave not even a half-hearted endorsement to Jimmy Carter. And people were saying, well, is Bernie going to do that? Is Bernie going to do that? Ted Kennedy at least was a Democrat. Bernie never has been. But, boy, Bernie came out and really made it clear where he stands and where his supporters need to stand. I expect the rest of the convention to go the way it should. I think it's going to go very smoothly, and I think that they're going to greet, when Bill Clinton gets up and speaks, when Barack Obama gets up and speaks. I mean, the star power at our convention compared to, the Scott Baio and the Duck Dynasty guy, even Sarah Silverman and Al Franken and Paul Simon, it was fabulous.
Yeah. Dave Lundy, the better half of Touche, which you can check out every Monday night here on The Download, joins us. You're going to be going to Philadelphia tomorrow. We'd love to check in with you from the convention later in the week, and we appreciate all your contributions. Dave Lundy, thanks for joining us, bud.
Justin, pleasure. Have a great night.
It's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up after the 11 o'clock news, Patty Vasquez takes over. Pretty late, Patty Vasquez. Looking forward to tomorrow's program as well as tomorrow's Democratic National Convention. Obviously, the roll call nomination. Tomorrow would be President Clinton as well. So there you go. So that's coming up. Joining us now from Philadelphia is Tracy Seffel. She is a contributor to Touche on Monday night. She's also a Democratic consultant who's worked for past campaigns for Hillary Clinton. She's in Philadelphia, and she is there for the speeches. Tracy, how did tonight go, and what was the highlight?
Hey, Justin. I should say that the massive thunderstorm that rocked Philadelphia has now washed away. So that is one highlight, because it certainly seemed like Armageddon was upon us for a short while. But weather aside, I think it's safe to say that this was Michelle Obama's night. Such a wonderful, personal, colorful, heartfelt speech. I found it so moving on so many levels, and I think that will show everyone from here forward that the tone has been set for this convention. Last week we had Cleveland, we had Trump, we had darkness and danger and evil and Michelle Obama, I think, made such a contrast by opening our convention tonight.
What was the feeling for Michelle Obama? Obviously, the delegates in the room, especially the Bernie Sanders delegates, had the boo birds out for certain portions of tonight's, even today's festivities. What was the feel and the tone for the First Lady?
I don't think it's too strong of a word to say adoration. She is, you know, she's truly become a beloved figure and figurehead for the Democratic Party. I heard so many people saying how much they're going to miss her, that she's been such a presence for 8 years, and what will we ever do without her? The way she spoke of her family was very effective and very moving for so many people, especially for anyone who feels like they too have seen the Obama's daughters grow up. There's a very visceral connection that many people have there. So it was affection and pride and a little bit of sadness to know that these days are soon over.
Dave Lundy just mentioned that one of the lowlights in his mind was Elizabeth Warren's speech, said it fell flat from speeches he's seen her perform before, where she's getting rousing, you know, standing ovations. This was not it. Do you feel the same way about Elizabeth Warren and her performance tonight?
Well, I would say slightly differently, that I think Elizabeth Warren demonstrated quite ably to her biggest audience that she really has no problem taking on Trump. Now, whether or not she brought the house down or was the most memorable speech of the night, I think Dave's right that she doesn't fall in that category. But if you think about her willingness and her dexterity in taking on Trump, that's an important feature from here forward between now and November for Elizabeth Warren to be dispatched, so to say, onto the trail to deliver those kinds of blistering criticisms of Trump. That's hugely important. And she, I believe, demonstrated tonight that she has no qualms getting up and doing that. Hmm.
Okay, so looking forward, moving and taking the momentum forward to tomorrow, what are you looking forward to for tomorrow's slate of events and speeches?
Well, I have to give Sarah Silverman credit for her line about "you're just being ridiculous" to the Bernie diehards, and I do hope that maybe tonight was the night when people had to sort of get it out of their system, their disappointment over the perfectly, indisputable outcome of the primaries. Okay, so we had Monday, we had the angry Bernie people. They got chastised, and Bernie himself gave his ringing endorsements of Hillary. So my hope is that tomorrow we can put a lot of this behind us. I do think that there are a lot of people who came to Philadelphia just sort of itching for a fight over this, that they feel their work is not done. However, it is, you know, we're going to move forward. This is Hillary's week. This is Hillary and Tim Kaine. This is, you know, we've got work to do here. So it is my hope that we move on in an optimistic way. And frankly, in a stark contrast to last week, I hope that we're moving on in a substantive way. I mean, there was more policy discussed tonight than, I don't know, in 6 months of the Republican campaign. It was very notable to me that this is about progressive policies. This is about helping working families, the things that, you know, motivate you to vote. So I'm happy to hear that, and I hope that there's more of it in store for us this week. Most of all, I just hope it's not quite so hot.
Good luck with that. Tracy Sepple is a Democratic consultant who has worked with past Clinton campaigns and is in Philadelphia for the convention. Tracy, thanks for checking in. We'll check back with you later this week.
You bet. Take care, Justin.
That's going to do it tonight. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for an awesome, awesome sound tonight with Sir the Baptist. Check those tracks out. They'll be online. Also, I think we did a Facebook Live of some of the stuff that's on our Facebook page, WGN Radio. Coming up tomorrow, star-studded show. Not only are we going to bring you reaction and analysis from Democratic National Convention Day 2, but we are going to have comedian Mike Birbiglia on the show. His movie that he wrote, directed, and starred in, Don't Think Twice, is coming out this week. So we'll talk with Mike Birbiglia. And also my guest at the big table tomorrow night, Ramsey Lewis. How about that? Talk about his awesome career in jazz music and beyond that. But we'll talk with Ramsey Lewis, the great Chicago jazz musician, tomorrow night here on The Download.